Welcome to the UK's only weekly FM and soon-to-be DAB radio show about transport and design. I'm Mark Ovenden, and today, as spring offers are about to expire, we are celebrating that fabulous travel option, a single ticket for every railway train in Europe. We've dug out our old interview with expert interrailer Brendan James, and we're giving you another chance to hear his story and his advice on how to travel across the continent with style and no car. This catch cast went out just under a year ago, but it's still very relevant today. And in today's edition, we're celebrating the joys of interrailing around Europe. What is it? Why do people do it? And how can you have a go? Today, we're honoured to be joined by author Brendan Bartram, whose pen name is Brendan James. Welcome to the catch cast, Brendan.
Hello, Mark. Delighted to be on your show.
Now, Brendan, please do explain for us what the heck is interrailing.
Okay, well, in a nutshell, interrail is a rail pass that gives you unlimited travel across Europe, or at least across most of Europe. And I think it's worth highlighting that there are passes these days for all age groups and actually quite a wide range of different kinds of interrail passes. So you've got flexi passes that give you a certain number of days free travel within a certain period of time, say a fortnight or a month. And then you've got continuous passes, which are a bit more expensive, but you have totally unlimited travel for the duration of the ticket. So whether that's 2 weeks or 3 months even. And then you've also got single country passes if you just wanted to explore, say, Spain or Finland or wherever, really.
Now, this is, sounds like an amazing scheme. How long has it all been going for? Is it a new thing?
No, not at all. In fact, it started way back in 1972. And I think at that point, it was just for people under the age of 21. Only cost around £27 back in the day.
Wow.
But that did, yeah, incredible. Gave you an entire month's travel. And originally, it was only meant to be a one-off thing just to mark 50 years of European railway cooperation at that point. But it actually was so popular that it's still with us to this day. And then gradually over the years, various changes were introduced. They extended the age limits, for example. I think the senior Interrail card was introduced back in 1979. And also the number of countries taking part, of course, increased over the years too.
So some of those people, say, for example, in the 1970s, those pioneering interrailers, they must have spent quite some time trying to plan their trips all across Europe. How did they do it?
Yeah, I think some people probably did. And because that was a challenge back in the day, the sort of interrailers Bible used to be, it still is, I think, largely something called the Thomas Cook European timetable that you used to be able to pick up from travel agents. And then it'd be a question of sitting down, planning your route, you know, looking at train times, working out exactly where you could get to by what time. But I actually get the impression that the majority of interrailers in those early days, they did less planning, ironically, than most people do today. And I think that's partly because in some ways it was just easier in the past. There were far fewer trains that required reservations. So, you know, you could just practically jump on any train that you fancied without having to worry about whether it was fully booked or not. And if you didn't like it or it was full, jump off, head somewhere else. So the kind of rise of compulsory reservations in lots of European countries today, that's actually made planning more important than it used to be.
So in some ways, they were kind of free as a bird. They could buy the pass and just literally turn up at any station, get on and see where the train took them, and didn't really matter to them then so much.
Exactly that. Yeah.
How lovely.
Yeah.
But don't tell me nowadays, Brendan, there is a way of doing this using your smartphone.
There absolutely is, exactly that. Yeah, the Rail Planner app, it's called. I think it was introduced about 10 or 12 years ago. And it allows you to plan your entire journey on your phone. So incredibly convenient. It also doubles up, of course, as your mobile pass. So you don't have to worry about printing anything off. Keeps everything very handily in one place. Though, actually, you can still get the old-fashioned paper passes if you're the sort of person who prefers paper ticket in your hand. For and against, I suppose, for both formats, really. It's just a question of personal preference. So I have to admit, you do hear occasionally horror stories where people suddenly couldn't get access to Wi-Fi, couldn't get through barriers because of it. So I still prefer the paper passes personally.
Yeah, for goodness sake, don't lose your mobile phone if it's got your tickets on it.
Plus that, of course.
Now, I think there were some famous interrailers, weren't they? Sort of during the 70s, 80s, 90s. It became a bit of a tradition, didn't it, for people like gap year students and just students generally. Are there any great stories?
Yeah, I'm sure there are. And, you know, there must be lots of very famous people that have been on interrail. Unfortunately, I can't give you any names, but as you say, it absolutely became quite a tradition, especially for university students back in the 70s, 80s, and ever since, really, taking a month, you know, out of the summer holidays to travel around the continent. And I suppose you could say in some ways that it kind of recreated the grand tour idea, you know, from the 18th and 19th century that used to be the preserve of aristocrats and noblemen. So in some ways you could say maybe that people like Byron and Shelley, they were in fact the first interrailers, although of course not by train.
Oh, what a lovely idea, of course.
Yeah.
And then you've got, you know, stories, haven't you, like The Talented Mr. Ripley and all those kind of classic stories and books about training around Europe. It must have been quite an amazing time when it started.
Yeah, I think in those early days, and of course, I think one thing that we forget is in those days, there weren't so many people travelling generally because obviously Eastern Europeans weren't able to, the Chinese weren't able to, and by and large, budgets didn't allow the vast majority of people to. So, yeah, it was a freer experience. It was a more accessible experience in lots of ways, and people had a fantastic time.
You mentioned at the beginning that the way the pass has been set up has changed over the years. How much of Europe is actually covered, or can you actually set which parts of the world you want to use the pass on?
Okay, so when it started back in the 70s, I think there were just 21 countries at that point that took part in Interrail, but that's gradually grown over the years since. So now there are 33 in total, virtually the whole of the continent, in fact, with you know, the exception of Russia, obviously, and a few other places. But those 33, they do include EU and non-EU countries like Serbia and even Turkey. And in fact, for quite a time in the 1980s, Morocco was also included. But I think the Moroccans got a bit tired of lots of revelers and hippies sort of overwhelming the Marrakesh Express. So they pulled out eventually.
And it's not like the Eurovision Song Contest description of Europe, where you've got places like Australia roped in or Israel or whatever.
No, it is an exclusively European scheme. As I say, with, you know, the addition of Turkey. So no, it's just Europe.
Today we're talking about exploring Europe by train with Brendan James, whose book Interrailing, Ramblings and A to Z Travelogue is out there now. So Brendan, how did you get into it?
Okay, so my first Interrail trip, I suppose like a lot of people, was back when I was a student in the 1980s. And I worked as a teaching assistant at a school in Germany and one in France before I went and started my course. So at that point, the cost of flying was still ridiculously expensive. So I'd taken the train firstly to Heidelberg for 6 months in Germany and then to Clermont-Ferrand in France, all the way from Wolverhampton to get to my jobs there.
Wow. Did you know that we are the UK's only weekly FM and soon to be DAB radio show about transport and design? And as the spring special offers on Interrail tickets are about to come to an end, I thought we'd just listen again to one of the world's experts on chugging around Europe from the seat of a train window. It's green and clean, and that's just my guest, Brendan James. Your book, Interrail Ramblings and A to Z Travelogue, it was published in 2024. How did you get the idea to write about your experiences?
Okay, well, at that point, it was a bit of a strange point in my life, really. I'd taken early retirement from work. Both my parents had sadly passed away. I was approaching 60. And somehow all of this kind of had the effect of making me look back on things in life, looking back at, you know, the places I've been to, journeys I've been on. And suddenly I had the idea, it'd be really nice to kind of try and find a way to capture some of this by writing about them, which was really something I'd always wanted to do as a sort of lifelong train lover, and also as a kind of personal homage, you know, to the joys of train travel abroad. Initially, that was the idea, and then I had the problem of thinking about, okay, so how do I go about structuring this kind of collection of travellers' tales? And then hit upon the idea of maybe just using an A to Z structure, where each letter stood for a particular journey's starting point. And I thought, yep, that seemed as good a way as any to put together a collection of light-hearted look-backs at the various journeys I've been on over the years.
I love that, because there are so many travel books that don't necessarily think about the structure, and the fact you did it sort of almost like a timetable from A to Z, that really seems to be an obvious way of doing it to me.
Yeah, and I think it worked. I think one of the nice things about it, and again from some of the feedback that I've had from people, is the fact that it's kind of broken the book down into nice bite-sized chunks, really, where, you know, if you're more interested in certain parts of Europe, you can easily dip in and dip out.
Now, you cover quite a lot of, as you called them before, exotic destinations, and even some British ones. I don't know if you can run us through some of your real big favourites.
Absolutely, but, you know, so many, really. But I think, and I know it's a bit of a cliche, but I would have to say Venice. I absolutely adore Venice, and I will never forget the first time that I went there. I'd travelled overnight on the Simplon Express, which in itself seemed really exciting, from Geneva, and arrived there very early on a Sunday morning. I think it was about 6 o'clock in the morning, and there was just nobody about at all. It really felt like having a private walk around a Canaletto painting. It was absolutely breathtaking. Just absolutely loved it ever since. I'd also have to say Istanbul. Again, there's just nowhere else like it. Again, the first time that I travelled there, it was on an overnight train from Romania in this case. It had taken the best part of 24 hours to get there, but just on arrival, pulling into the station and the sort of suburbs of Istanbul, looking out of the window, this manic mega city of mosques and ancient architecture. Remember the train pulling through the ancient Roman city walls, the sights and sounds, the Sea of Marmara, just completely overwhelming and unforgettable. And, you know, you couldn't help but wonder what it must have been like for travellers back in the early 1900s, arriving there on the Orient Express, for example. So, Istanbul, Venice, absolute favourites for me. But also smaller places like Strasbourg in France, Cordoba in Spain, Freiburg in Germany, absolute gems. And not always at the top of kind of people's bucket lists, but absolutely well worth travelling to.
Oh, crikey, you're really making me feel so jealous now. There's several places you listed there that I've never had the chance to go to, Venice being one of them, and I just think, my goodness me, I need to just go and buy an Interrail pass as soon as this programme finishes. What about some of the more quirky or bizarre things that happened to you on a train or in some of these places? Can you remember some of those?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, so many incidents, really, but one that particularly sticks in my mind. It was an overnight journey in Russia, in fact, from Moscow to a place called Vologda. We travelled beyond Poland off Interrail to go into Russia. And it was just like no other journey I've ever been on. We got tickets for something the Russians call Platska. I'd never heard of it at that point. But it's a kind of open dormitory train. If you can imagine a kind of carriage kitted out with basically empty supermarket shelves that are just bunks for people to lie on. It really quite basic and quite strange. Not at all comfortable. Add to that, it was the height of summer. There was no air conditioning. It was absolutely packed to the rafters. And people were just travelling with every conceivable object that you could think of. You know, people with buckets of vegetables, animals under their arm. I did even spot somebody with a small hand basin, not a kitchen sink, but it was as good as. And I just remember when I'd finally managed to find the bunk that was mine, lying down and glancing across, and there was an elderly woman opposite me, smiling back at me, cuddling a chicken under her arm. It just seemed a really weird and overwhelming journey, and 10 hours at that. So it was hot, it was weird, but it was actually quite something.
My goodness me, that would have been strange and very, very stuffy, I would have thought, in a train like that. What about some of the most luxurious ones you've been on?
I've always shunned luxury, really, because I sort of partly because I'm quite mean. So I think probably some of the most luxurious ones have been where we've had a compartment just for the two of us overnight. And okay, they've not always been exactly luxurious, but there's something about having your own space and the privacy of a compartment for two, and the romance of it as well somehow, that's really quite delightful. And I've done that on several occasions, and that often works out as being a much, much nicer experience than when you're sharing a sleeping compartment, say, with six other people.
Do you tend to make a lot of your interrailing journeys on your own, or does your husband come with, or do you go with friends?
I've actually done most of my interrail trips on my own over the years. Done lots of trips with my previous partner and my husband now. We went on a rail tour of Morocco just a few weeks ago. We got the ferry across from Spain and then spent 2 or 3 weeks crisscrossing the country down from Tangier to Fez and back across to Casablanca and down to Marrakesh. It was a really delightful experience, and actually really impressed with Moroccan railways, I have to say.
Well, you've made me want to come on any of those journeys with you or on my own. It sounds incredible. Can you remember roughly how many separate interrailing trips you've made, and are you planning some more?
Okay, so I think I've probably done something like 5 or 6 actual dedicated interrail trips over the years. But I've also done lots of non-interrail trips, you know, say like the recent trip to Morocco, and then trips where we've just travelled less widely, just maybe visiting certain parts of Europe, like southern Germany and Austria, or Switzerland and eastern France, for example. And I would say it's actually often worth looking at the cost of rail fares for journeys that you're planning to go on, because depending on where you go, it actually can sometimes work out cheaper than, you know, if you just book standard fares. Just depends what you have in mind, how long you want to be away for, and how far you want to travel.
Now, you covered at the beginning when we were talking that there are different types of interrailing pass, and I think this particular one's just restricted to Europe. But is there anything else people could look for in terms of a rail pass for other parts of the world, Brendan?
Joe, that is a very good question. As a sort of completely Eurocentric rail traveller, I'm not totally sure. I would imagine there are. And again, it's the sort of thing I would have thought a quick Google, you know, if you're interested in Australia or North America, for example. I would be very surprised if there aren't some kind of arrangements available for rail travel.
You mentioned also that it's sometimes worthy, if you're planning a trip, to plan a bit in advance and have a look. Because I remember, wasn't there something they did in Germany where you could travel around the whole of Germany for a weekend for €9 or something? Is it worth checking on schemes like that before you get your interrail pass?
Absolutely, yeah. The Germans are brilliant in this respect. They have something called the Deutschlandticket, and I think it's €49 a month, and that gives, anybody can sign up for it, you don't have to be German. I think it runs from the first of the month, and you can travel the length and breadth from north to south, east to west of the entire country, €49 for an entire month. So again, anybody just interested in Germany, that would definitely be your best bet. It doesn't allow you to travel on high-speed trains, or at least you can, but you have to pay, obviously, any additional supplements for high-speed services or whatever else. But yeah, lots of countries have their own individual arrangements, so definitely worth looking into.
Now, you also said at the beginning when we were talking that the original idea of the Interrail Pass itself was for young people. But nowadays, I think you said anyone can purchase a pass. And roughly how much are we looking at here?
Okay, it's a good question. I think originally, when it obviously first came in, it was just for the under 21s and then under 26s. But yeah, these days you've got passes for every age category. So even children have their own separate category, as do seniors and then younger groups and so on. You can also buy them as first or second class. The cost question is actually quite a tricky one, because there's just so many different variables. So depending on, you know, how many days travel you want to include within whichever period. But just to give you a sort of rough idea, you're probably looking at around, say, £300 or so for 7 days in a month travel, or maybe £400 for 2 weeks continuous travel. But again, it will just depend on, you know, how old you are, whether it's first or second class. And one thing I would say is it's worth keeping an eye on the Interrail website, because periodically they do offer quite significant discounts, sometimes even 50% off, which makes a tremendous difference. Usually when you buy them, you have a year's grace within which to use it. So if there was a sale tomorrow, you could buy it tomorrow, but you wouldn't have to travel for 11 months if you didn't want to.
Oh, good advice. Okay. And is there any other advice you have for anyone interested to prepare for having a go? I mean, apart from reading your book, of course.
Yeah, of course. I think it's worth sitting down, first of all, and just working out if what you have in mind is worth doing on an Interrail pass. It's very easy to check Eurorail prices online these days. But yeah, if you do go for Interrail, what I would definitely say is just try and avoid the temptation of cramming too much in, and pace yourself, you know, because it can be incredibly tiring if you just overdo it, particularly if you want to see, you know, lots of capital cities. If you're constantly doing, you know, Paris, Berlin, Rome, it gets very hectic and very sapping. So I'd also say try and strike a balance between cities, smaller places, take a rest in between, and just make sure you build in some relaxation time. I would avoid doing lots of overnight travel. That gets very, very tiring, because it is generally, unless you're a brilliant sleeper, which I'm not, it's very hard to get a comfortable night's sleep, even in a couchette or a sleeper compartment. And if you are doing that, if you are sleeping overnight, I would recommend a sleeping compartment for maybe just the two of you. And these days you can get individual compartments as well, because if you're in a couchette with 4 to 6 other strangers, sometimes it can be the sleepless night from hell.
Now, talking of cramming too much in, has anybody tried to do, shall we say, too much and broken any records or anything?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I'm sure lots of people have often done a little bit too much and just ended up exhausting themselves. And as you say, I think for some people, it has become a bit of a competitive challenge. There's a German called Manfred Weiss. Apparently, he travelled about something like 22,000 miles in the space of a month. This was 25 years ago. And apparently, that's still a Guinness World Record. Again, each to their own. And much as I love trains, I think that just sounds like a total nightmare. So I wouldn't advise it unless you're the sort of person who gets off on that kind of challenge, really.
Yes, I imagine you get a very sore backside from sitting down all those times, rumbling over all those points across Europe for 20,000 miles. I know you've written another book, haven't you? Gerald Filey's Euro Diary, is that correct? So I can't help but ask myself, what was that one about? And what's next for you, Brendan?
Yes, I have indeed. And that one's, yeah, it's a very different thing, not a travelogue at all. Kind of comedy novel, though it does perhaps unsurprisingly include quite a bit of overseas rail travel. It's about a disillusioned black country teacher, so nothing autobiographical in there at all, who decides to just kind of abandon his humdrum job and head off to the continent on a quest for excitement and a new life. And kind of eventually he ends up running a sex shop in Amsterdam with his gay German bestie, and kind of getting drawn into a bit of a madcap world of dodgy doings. It's a bit like a Midlands version of Midnight Cowboy, you might think of it like that, but hopefully with a few more laughs along the way. As regards next steps, writing wise, I am actually thinking about maybe doing a sequel to Gerard's Diary, though that's possibly next on the writing agenda. And travel wise, well, we're about to go off on a cruise for the very first time, going up to the Faroes and Iceland. Not something I've ever done before. So something completely different, and who knows, that could lead to a whole new kind of direction of future travel and even writing.
Ah, heading for the Northern Lights, maybe.
Hopefully, yeah.
Well, that was a fascinating insight into life on the rail, so to speak. And if you want to read more, Brendan's book is called Interrail Ramblings, an A to Z Travelogue. You can find the tickets and passes to go travelling yourself at interrail, that's all one word, .eu, and their spring sale is still on for the next few days. Please join us again next time for more chatting art, transport, communications history.